Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May 15th, 2018. We're at Vets Hall in Morro Bay. This is the regular monthly meeting of the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. Acting as the Citizens Oversight Committee. We have a quorum present, and I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask for a moment of silence, please. All right, let's rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you all. We will begin with committee member announcements. Do any committee members have announcements? I'll start on my left with Bart. John?
No announcements, but I did want to ask Jen a question that's not on the agenda. When do you think you'll be doing the third quarter investment report? And is that going to come to us before it goes to the council or no?
Sorry, Wi-Fi passwords. So third quarter, I did want to bring up the third quarter budget report, so maybe we can talk about both of those together. Third quarter investment report, I think we can put on the June 26th council meeting, and so that would mean it could come to you on June 19th. The third quarter budget performance report, we're having kind of conversations about that. It feels awkward to me to bring it on June 26th, 2 days before the end of the close of the fiscal year. So we're targeting June 12th, which is late too, but that means it wouldn't have time to come to the committee beforehand. Kind of the timing of everything is just a little awkward. So if that works, we'll do third quarter on the 19th for investments, but you won't see the budget performance report in advance of it going to council.
Thank you. Dave, any announcements? John, Don. Actually, I have two announcements for anybody watching or not aware. Wednesday, May 16th at 3 o'clock in the Morro Bay Public Library is a presentation by city staff, or workshop, if you will, on the update to the water reclamation facility. So I know there's a lot of citizens interested in that. If you can attend, usually those have been in the evening. This one is in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, Wednesday, May 16th at the Public Library in Morro Bay. So, and then secondly, I wanted to announce that the Open Space Alliance is sponsoring a benefit concert, and that will feature Kent Nagano. It will be held on June 8th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at St. Timothy's Church. So that's on behalf of the Morro Bay Open Space Cerrito Peak Project. So if you're interested, June 8th, 7 p.m., St. Timothy's Church. And it's actually an interesting program. He's a Grammy Award-winning conductor, native of Morro Bay, and also the music director for the Montreal Symphony and the Hamburg State Opera in Germany. So if you're interested, you may find that of interest. I don't see a cost on my flyer, so I'm sure you can find it on the Open Space Alliance. And I'll pass this flyer here. So thank you all. Okay, so I'll open it for public comment. Seeing none, close public comment. And let's go with item A1 on the consent calendar. And that is the approval of minutes from last month, April 25th, 2018. That was a special meeting. It wasn't on our regular third Tuesday. Minutes have been prepared by city staff. Does anybody have any corrections, updates, questions, comments, please? All right, can I have a motion to approve those minutes? All right. All right. Thank you, Don. And second?
A second.
All right. Second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. That was Don making the motion and Dave seconding it. Okay. Very good. All right, so let's move on to our main business item here, B1. This is the discussion and input on the proposed fiscal year 2018-19 operating and capital budget. We discussed some of that at our last meeting along with all the Measure Q items, so this is somewhat of a continuation of it. However, there were two budget workshops held by staff for City Council on May 8th and May 9th. Most of us have seen that material and reviewed it, as well as the entire FY18-19 capital and operating budget presentation and notebook. So I think maybe, Jennifer, if you just want to summarize that or any changes since we discussed last time, and then maybe several of our members had some very good questions sent to you, and some you were able to answer. But I think for the benefit of all of us and anybody watching, we could go through some of those questions, and then if we have any recommendations or changes, we'll make that known.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. So included in the packet today were the copies of presentations for the May 8th and May 9th study sessions to kind of highlight for you what we reviewed at both of those study sessions. The council during both study sessions expressed appreciation for the committee and your review and all the questions that you had thus far on the budget. That was mentioned a couple of times, so thank you for that. The changes prior to, after we met last on April 25th, for the general fund, we included a discretionary beautification line item of $5,000 and increased the bequest line item in the city council meeting. I believe those were the only two changes from what you had previously seen in the general fund. And then we provided you with a copy of the rest of the other funds, if you will, the internal service funds, other funds, enterprise funds, and the proposed capital when we distributed that to council. So we thought today that it would be an opportunity for you to provide feedback and give us questions on those parts of the budget that you hadn't seen before. We have one more budget study session on the 22nd to the council. We're mostly planning to talk about CalPERS and the 10-year forecast. We're in the process of updating the forecast this week and outlining some options for the council to consider in addressing the unfunded liability for CalPERS. There's, you know, an array of options to deal with that, and cities choose different methods depending on their capacity to do one or the other. We're hoping to get some feedback and direction on council to kind of narrow down the scope so we don't go down 10 different paths. If we could focus on a couple, that would be helpful from a staff workload perspective.
So hang on, not sure I got all that. That is on May 22nd, you said?
That's the main focus of the budget study session for the 22nd.
Okay.
There's a few smaller cleanup items about the proposed budget and
okay.
A couple points of clarification that came up after the second budget study session, but focus, hopefully, it will be on the 10-year forecast and PERS, because that's kind of the looming cloud, if you will, that's steering not only this budget, but the future budgets as well, and what we have to keep in mind going forward.
So that's next Wednesday, the day after City Council meets, is that right?
The 22nd is Tuesday, I think.
Oh, okay, Tuesday,
it's,
I'm sorry.
It starts at 4, I believe, right before, it's a...
You're right, yeah. Right. Okay, so it's right before the... Okay.
Correct.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So if you'd like, I've already received 21 questions on the budget from the committee. And as the chair mentioned, we responded with answers to several of them, but there are some that we did not. So we can go through those questions, and I'll read the answers, and then if there's any follow-up, we can discuss those. The first question was regarding fund balance reserves. It's referring to page B12 as a schedule, and then kind of individual schedules on the various pages in the budget. The fund balance reserve should read cash balance. My preference is to kind of move towards reporting on fund balance because there's some timing issues there, and that's really ultimately what you have to work with after all the adjustments are made at year end. So I think in my head I wanted to use fund balance, and I know in the past it was cash balance. So we'll make that correction so it's consistent, but I think in future budgets we're going to try to move towards that fund balance reporting. The second question was regarding legal services.
Yeah,
so,
can we just jump in if we want
clarification?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So on some of them, you actually made the transition already. So, for example, on Measure Q, you already did convert all those numbers to fund balance. So are you going to, in future iterations, go back to cash balance for Measure Q so that it's consistent, or how's that going to work? I understand why you don't want to go back and do fund balance for every single fund, because that's just a tremendous amount of work to get all that historical data into these worksheets. But if there's areas where you've actually made the transition, what is your plan?
I guess I would be open to hearing your feedback. And one thought is I could footnote, for instance, in Measure Q that is, in fact, fund balance and it wasn't a mistake, so it was clear that this didn't mean to read cash balance, and maybe that's the way to go and kind of slowly start transitioning. And
I think that's a good idea, rather than calling it cash balance if it isn't cash balance.
Okay.
I guess the same would hold true for the general fund undesignated reserves, which is... That's the unassigned fund balance from the prior year.
That would be true. I think there's less discrepancy between there because there's not as much activity in the reserve
right.
fund.
I think if there's any figures in here that aren't just strictly cash balance, probably there needs to be a notation.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks, John.
And there was one more request I had. It's difficult for me to look at all these different funds and get a grip on them compared to what's in the CAFR. And I think the reason is because the CAFR combines different funds in ways that are really unknown to the reader of the CAFR. So if there's any way we could get like a legend that shows exactly which funds are combined together for presentation in the CAFR, that would help us with comparing those numbers with what's in the budget. And I think it's really important to have really good historical data, because it's going to, you know, reveal trends that won't really show up if the data is not really, really strong. So if there's any way to do that, that would help me.
It is challenging, and even in putting this document together, we were trying to reference back to the CAFR to see if we had a good ending balance to start with, and we're having to pull up those schedules frequently to see what they consolidated into internal services, for example. So if I'm hearing you, the timing for that would be with the CAFR presentation. I think that's doable.
Yes.
Can't do it to incorporate with this document for June, but for CAFR, and whether it's in the CAFR document or as a supplement to it that's distributed, I'm not sure of how it will be done, but that's doable for CAFR.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. The next question was regarding legal services. Our intent is to charge all funds for legal work that's actually done. In the past, there's been kind of a split based on, you know, historical trends and what percentage of time. It's easy enough to sort that out because it's billed by, you know, type of work that's done. So we'll charge water for work that was done on water-related issues, sewer for sewer-related issues, and any of the other ancillary, you know, funds that may get hit or have need for legal services.
So just to be clear on that, when you said in the previous years it's been done on a split, it was my understanding it was kind of a just an allocated spread, X percent, and now you have better data or actuals, correct?
Sure.
So is that creating a bunch of additional work for the legal when they're doing it to charge their time, or is it pretty straightforward?
The attorney firm already sends us bills broken out that way, so it's not additional work on their end. It will be additional work on staff's end, because now that we are consolidating the entire budget into one program for transparency purposes, we'll have to go back and journal those actual, reimburse the general fund, if you will, or do a transfer one way or the other to make the general fund whole. So it'll be a little bit, it'll be another step for us, and we'll probably do that on a quarterly basis, so it'll wash out when we do our quarterly updates. That seems to make sense.
Okay, but it's in the interest of greater transparency, so.
Correct.
I had a related question.
Yeah, there was
a throw in here. And that's the WRF, and I'm not sure if the WRF has to be separated between sewer and water. But where are those legal fees? In the summary, it didn't mention legal fees at all. So I tend to think that it's not there for some reason. You could have it buried under water and sewer, but how are we collecting and charging fees for that project? Because there's clearly a lot of work being done.
So I can answer that for 18-19 going forward. Not sure of what the fees are for 17-18. I haven't looked at the WRF specific. Okay. For 18-19, after that was brought up at our last CFAC meeting, we mentioned that during either the first or second budget study session. I think it was the second, because that's when we did the capital. And we acknowledged to the council that the committee had brought that up. We were going to add a line item in the WRF budget. After discussion with the public works director and the attorney, we settled on $25,000. As a budget for 18-19 that we can adjust up or down as we progress through the year. Somehow I need to account for that in the general fund thing, because the idea is for it to all be there and transparent, and I don't want to double count for it in both. So there'll be a line item in the WRF capital project. There'll probably be a footnote that it's transferred into the general fund.
And I guess it's real nit, but do you have to separate out legal costs for the water versus the sewer?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if it's two line items, well, you or put it together and know that it's two or something?
Well, you mean for the WRF project itself? Well, we're working on a agreed upon definition of when does it become water? At what point does it transition from a sewer project to a water project? Not an engineer, so that's a little, but once you get to the point of reclamation is somewhere around there, it's becoming water. So I would imagine we would want to delineate out the legal services so we know if it's the water or sewer fund transferring. So we're paying for WRF right now from accumulation, right? So whether we're transferring in from sewer accumulation or water accumulation would be the question.
So the $25,000 is assumed to be already included in the number that was presented. You just have to pull it out?
It's on top of. It was not included. We didn't have legal services included in the original proposed budget for WRF.
Okay.
If what you say is correct, then it'd be the point where they deliver the water from the sewer treatment reclamation facility to the water supply. It's very close to that point when the water's been treated and delivered to the supply point for the water plant. And so that at the point they start to pump it back into the ground, then is would be that point, if I understand what you said.
So just to be clear, I don't want to imply that I'm at all know the exact break in that, and that's what Rob and the new Corolla and the new team is determining as we work through the rate study. It's somewhere around there, and the engineers that are experts in that are figuring out when we're going to make that break. because that will tell when we need to transfer money in from water versus sewer.
That there is no formal description. It's what seems reasonable to everybody.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
So, Jennifer, since you're going to be basing these costs to the enterprise funds for legal services on actual charges that appear on the attorney's bill, there's a pretty good chance that there's going to be some big variances between budget and actual next year, would you say?
I think that's fair to say, since it's been a percentage basically from prior year. So as we move through first quarter and second quarter, we'll be able to do some, you know, budget adjustments and true it up and have better data each year to know what to budget. The clerk's office, Lori in the clerk's office, keeps a spreadsheet right now, so we are able to see some data from this year so far. There's a little bit of a natural lag in how they do some of the billing, but you know, I think we're probably in the park at least, and we'll true it up as we go through the year.
I do have a question. Who's responsible for managing the city attorney's contract?
Well, the city attorney, there'll be a contract amendment coming back to the council, I think, in June. I'm not sure it's a designation of managing it. We all have a role in overseeing the billing, per se, and the city attorney gets a review through the city council. So there's an annual review that was completed a month or so ago.
I guess the question is, who's the first one who reviews the bill for reasonableness?
The city clerk's office.
The city clerk? So that the city clerk is theoretically managing the attorney's contract then?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay,
I just wanted
ahead.
To make sure it wasn't you.
Go ahead, Jen. Thank you.
Okay. The third question refers to page D2. It's regarding the liability insurance amounts and the estimated 17-18 year end compared to the budget of 17-18. Dana, our city clerk, is also in charge of risk management. She spent a significant amount of time, and then we worked together on looking at 17-18 actuals and in developing the 18-19 budget. She had not been included in that in the prior year, so I can't really tell you what the 17-18 budget number was based on, and why it was so different. My experience with insurance is that it usually takes a few years for you to see premiums increase if there's been any higher than normal utilization or cases that have come through. So I would speculate that there might have been that 2 or 3 years ago, that maybe we had increased claims that resulted in the premium increases for the year. But I can't tell you that for sure.
So it looks like the estimate for 2017-18 is really the outlier when you look at the previous year actuals. So I guess my question would be, does the general liability insurance have an experience modification component like workers' comp has? So if you have claims that have occurred, then they just hit you with higher premiums in future years because your XMOD has changed. Is that how it works for general liability insurance as well?
You know, through the JP, I'm not sure about their calculations. I'd have to look at their spreadsheets. The JPA we were involved in for Sonora when I was there, they did do modifications and true-ups each year. So I would think maybe that's how it's CJ Central Valley. But I think that's how I don't know about this JPA specifically. We can get back to you on that.
Internal service funds?
So the description for risk management revenues being charges for services versus information technology being a transfer. The workers' comp, for instance, is generated through payroll, and then it comes in as a charge for service. The IT is effectively working more like a cost allocation plan and being determined as a transfer in. Typically, I would expect to see it more as a transfer in, and it would be a charge out to the departments. But I think because some of them are working through our payroll functions, they're coming in that way.
So for funds that don't run, for insurance premiums that don't run through payroll, like general liability and property and vehicle, is that based on an allocation formula?
Well, some of them, yes, they are.
But they're still handled as a charge for service rather than a transfer.
Correct. And I don't know historically why that was. I can understand it a little bit for the ones that generate through payroll. I'm still not sure. I still think you could do it as a transfer.
That's prior practice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Page D23, this is a discussion of the general fund reserve balance and that we don't have a calculation showing that. Responses will add that calculation into the text on, or into a note on page D24 to show that we're in compliance, to show if we're in compliance with the emergency reserve, and then that will be clear in the document. Question six, it was presented. Oh, this is regarding impact fees. So there's general government impact fees. They're on page G21 of the document. The purchase of the fire engine, $73,500, is budgeted to come from the fire impact fees. And the question is, how does this meet the intent of what is stated on G21 as use of the impact fees? To ensure that development pays for costs of infrastructure expansion required to meet the needs of the development. If you continue to read on that page, it talks about the fees being used for capital project, new facilities, and vehicles. Really, what you have to guide impact fees on is what the base they were collected off of. It's our understanding that vehicles for fire, police, there's a subsection of those that are police impact fees are permissible based on how those were calculated. And I think the thought process is that as new development comes into town for fire and police specifically, you're going to likely have more calls for service. You have more, whether it's residents, shoppers, whatever type of development it is, the vehicles are used for that. Lowers the useful life of the vehicle. So that's kind of the nexus that's made between the collection of the fee and use of the fee.
No, okay.
I was going to say, basically, we talked about that a little bit last time in the procurement, and I believe staff was going to bring back, or somebody from the fire department, some justification on that before that, for that purchase. Is that correct, or analysis of the financing?
Correct. So the committee wants to see, and we agreed to bring back the single source, sole source, or whatever purchasing mechanism
okay.
we end up using. I suspect that will be on the 19th, but
okay.
at that point we won't have an approved, we may have an approved budget. It'll either be the 19th or the first meeting in July that you'll see that.
Okay.
Maybe I could just explain a little bit about why I asked this question. My concept of this is, if you use development fees or impact fees, it basically means you need to buy more capacity somehow. Mm-hmm. So if you're replacing one fire truck with another fire truck, typically you'd be able to use those kind of funds if you were going to buy a bigger fire truck or one that had some kind of capability, an additional one or something that had some other kind of capability. Mm-hmm. That is over and above what you're replacing. Like if you've replaced a water tank with a bigger water tank, well, clearly you still only have one water tank, but it has a bigger capacity. So that's why I asked the question. And what I'm reading in the budget is it's just simply a replacement vehicle for one that's worn out. Mm-hmm. And so I would just think that if just to cross the T's and dot the I's, that at least management should make some kind of a statement as to the justification for the use of impact fees, or if you don't want to do that, then maybe have the legal counsel write just a paragraph as to why this is something that is appropriate.
I would just add in response, I think you're really getting to the crust of the Quimby fees, which are like the park in lieu fees and the parking in lieu fees that are paid in lieu of, you know, requirements for open space or something like that. And in those cases, they do have to be new or expanded on. And that was part of the conversation at the council budget study session about this, about City Park. There's a proposed capital project in here to put new playground equipment at City Park. And there was long discussions internally about, can you use park in lieu fees for that? And after talking to our city attorney, you know, it gets down to, well, does it have so many more widgets than the old playground equipment? Because it has to be an enhancement to that. These are not in lieu fees. These are impact fees. So it's the impact that the development had on use of the existing equipment.
Very good explanation, Jen, but I had the same issue John did when I was listening to some of the discussion on the parking in lieu fees. It seems like, you know, if you can't, a business or whomever can't provide adequate parking, how does using that money for some other totally unrelated, you know, how does that alleviate the parking situation? But apparently that's, they're allowed to do that.
Well, for parking, it has to be for a parking-related. We can't use parking in lieu for parks. So there's park in lieu, there's parking in lieu, so two separate funds. There's a proposal in the budget to use parking in lieu for angled parking, which will create more parking spots in lieu of what the development.
All right, thank you.
Question number 7 on page G39 is regarding the fire donation fund, and the text to the document indicated that the fund was originally established for the mutual aid reimbursement money. I think that was the intent of that fund when it was established in the 90s. It's really a donation fund and needs to account for fire donations. The mutual aid money that comes in, there's a direct offset to general fund expenses that are incurred for staffing, so that needs to go into the general fund. And then anything beyond that is kind of that conversation we had during the mid-year discussion that really should maybe go into an equipment replacement for those funds, but it still wouldn't be a donation. It's not a donation. It's for services provided.
So is that something where the council needs to amend a policy that they've established in the past? I mean, when they established this fund, is there something written that council says we want reimbursements from mutual aid put into this fund? Or do you feel comfortable just striking that out of the narrative yourself?
I think I would be most comfortable if it is adding another sentence to the narrative that says, you know, something about, well, this was the intent originally. It's now no longer being used for this purpose and is purely tracking donations rather than. I didn't get a chance to look, and I was going to ask Joe, but I think legally we can't put them in here anyways. I think they have to go into the general fund, and that's changed since the 90s. But I don't know that 100%. So
this statement is just kind of a leftover from.
I think there was one of these before, too, and I think my response was I'm a little uncomfortable changing some of the historical narrative in the document, but your point is that it should be valid and accurate, too. So I think a good step would be adding a little bit more narrative to say that's no longer the intent or purpose of it. I'm not aware of a council policy that set this fund aside for that purpose, so I'm not sure it needs council action.
Does the council establish the funds, or does management establish the funds?
Management has discretion to establish funds for specific purposes that you have to account for. You establish a donation account because they come with strings attached, for lack of a better word, right? There's conditions on what you can use that for. And in order to track that and properly account for that to whoever donated it or for the auditors, we put it in a different fund. And that's a management discretion. You know, I suppose if you're getting a budget that has all these willy-nilly funds set up there, you know, it's council's prerogative to say, why are we doing this? And they talked a little bit about consolidating the project and the accumulation fund. You know, those came to council back a couple of years ago when the city manager, Dave Buckingham, was here. And I think council, at time of budget adoption, set up those funds. But not every fund has a guiding resolution to it.
Okay.
Question 8 is on page H, as in Henry, H5, regarding the water rate consultants' coverage ratio. Mm-hmm. The comment is that we don't indicate anywhere what our ratio is. So we, for CCWA in our annual continuing disclosure reporting, had a coverage ratio of 1.86. So we can add that to the narrative or to the note in there that that's what our 16-17 ratio was for purposes of a disclosure.
If it's not appropriate to have the actual calculation in this document or in the CAFR, would that be available as a public document or available to this committee?
The CCWA report, annual report, is available on their website, and it has all of the member agencies in there, and I can send you a link. I'll send that link out to the whole committee.
Can you explain exactly that water ratio, numerator, denominator? I thought we were under the 1.26, or is that the debt ratio I'm thinking of?
So we're talking about the debt ratio. The city was under that for many years, and then when the rate study, when the rates went into effect,
okay,
we've now achieved it.
So that's why we're so high above
correct,
it. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Page 9 is H14, and see about the accumulation in the utility discount program. Our budget show, you know, has an estimated $123,000 from the penalties coming into that fund, and then we only spend about an average of $30,000 a year. Our goal would be for anybody that's qualifying and wanting to take advantage of that program to do so. We're the front county counter clerks are informing people regularly about the program. The enrollment period, I believe, is July, so we're looking at doing a insert or something in the next bill or some kind of notification on the bill about enrollment in the program if they qualify, and, you know, hopefully be able to get qualifying participants to take advantage of that.
When I was picking up my agendas this week, I noticed that there was a family in the process paying a water bill, which was arrears. Are these the sort of people who might be candidates for this fund, or how does that work?
You qualify through the PG&E Care program. So if you meet the standards to qualify through that and are enrolled in that program, you can take part of our utility discount program. I don't know the individual circumstances of that. It's not everybody that's in arrears that would qualify.
So it's not a typical question they would ask in order to see if they can assure a better payment.
What both Shuri and Carly, and those are our two front counter clerks, are doing more proactively is referring people to that program. They don't necessarily know if they qualify either. It's all individual circumstances, but they are being much more proactive. And when people come in or have delinquencies on their bills, is referring to them to the program, especially since its enrollment period is coming up. So they're doing a good job at trying to proactively help people that may qualify.
Okay, thank you.
Can you obtain information from PG&E directly as to which customers might qualify?
I'm not sure. I can look into that.
I wonder, considering there's going to be $400,000 in this fund at the end of this year, can you spend some of that money to advertise the program or to do the research or pay PG&E, give you a list, or, you know, whatever? maybe do direct mail to customers that they identify, or I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're able to disclose that or not. We could certainly ask the question. The worst they can say is no, but you know, the alternative is to look at the guidelines of the program and have a discussion at the council level if it wants to be something other than that. You know, the qualifications for the discount program don't necessarily have to follow the PG&E care program.
I would like to see some other discussion of that. I would guess that the PG&E care program has income levels that are pretty challenging to stay in Morro Bay with, to live in Morro Bay with, and given that we know we're going to have expected increases, I would urge the council to start thinking about, you know, what other parameters there could be on programs like this, just thinking about it for the future.
You know, there was, and I'm having a little bit of a brain cramp because I don't know if it was one of the specific goals, but several of the council members brought up for a future council agenda item a possible revenue source for utility discount. So that should come back to council. I believe it was made in reference to the cannabis and if the cannabis tax could be dedicated to an offset program. So that will come back. I don't know the date. I don't think it's been set yet, but so question 10 is on the capital, proposed capital projects. It's page I-21 and 22. It's $308,000 for the Surf Street Stairs project, $41,000 in 18-19 for design work. So the budget page after we distributed the budget, the $41,000 in 18-19 should not have been in the proposed budget because we were recommending deferring that project. Then after the council study session on the 9th, that project was added to the capital projects list. So the $41,000 will stay in the 18-19 budget. The total project cost is $308,000. We're going to fund that through a combination of money from the project and the capital accumulation funds. There's a total of $450,000 between those two funds, so more than the $308,000 estimate. But I think we would acknowledge that that's an older estimate done a few years ago. So I think, you know, we're going to kind of reserve those two funds for this project until we get a more refined estimate. And know if that amount's going to change or not. But we did recommend to the council to set the money aside so that it'll be fully funded and the project can be completed. We don't have, the other part of the question was statistics on the utilization of those stairs. There isn't a pedestrian counter or, you know, any kind of mechanism to track that's in place right now. So I don't have an answer for you how frequently they're used or how frequently they've been used in the last couple of years. I think they're not in great shape, so they either need to be closed, taken down, or fixed from a liability perspective.
I had a related question again to the ADA. The page before that has the larger issue of ADA, almost $6 million in the future. Undefined as far as what future means. So these basically presumably go together, and someone determined that of the $6.1 million worth of ADA improvements we need, we should start with this $300,000. And there's some liability, which implies there's some liability with the other $5.8 million worth of work that we're not doing now. And I guess I'm not, how much of a liability, and that's a lot of money to come up with. We want to do streets. We got their CalPERS problems.
So the
question, it's the ADA in general. This apparently, you know, was pulled out to say, okay, let's do this one this year. And then the other items, which are streets and various things that have uneven sidewalks, I guess. But what's the overall plan for addressing ADA issues and where's the money going to come from?
So there was a study done a few years ago that identified all of the almost $6 million in that ADA project. And it's, you're right, it's, you know, streets, sidewalks, crosswalks, variety of items. I will have to get back to you. I'm not sure the surf street stairs were part of those and it was pulled out, or if it was already identified as a separate project prior to that. And Sandy's shaking her head, so she might know. Okay. So we can get back to you on if that was in fact pulled out of there. But the council also added $140,000 for sidewalk work that will be budgeted to go into this ADA project. To say that the consultant that did the work recognized that there were deficiencies. Whether or not the deficiencies create that much in liability for the city, I'm not sure it's a linear correlation, but they recognized and pointed out areas that needed to be or should be addressed, you know, at some point in the future. So we're trying to address those needs as we have funding available and as we are able to get to them from a capacity level too. We have to keep in mind that there's only so many employees, and even if we contract these out, you still have to oversee the contract. So at some point, you only have so many hours in the day to get work done. Which isn't a great answer, I understand. I mean, I realize
that. That was basically my point. I mean, putting placeholders in for something that just isn't in the cards. I mean, I guess it's nice to know that it's nice to have estimates. That's why we have the two growing to $3 or $4 million budget gap. And at what point do you just say, okay, that's not going to happen, other than it would be nice to have?
Well, I think actually the conversation that occurred at the study session around this one, I think, was a good example of this was set aside as a capital project. It wasn't funded last year, or if it was, it was to a very small amount. And then the conversation at this year was where's their money and what can we fund with the money we have? So we had $140,000 and acknowledged that we have these ADA requirements. Sidewalks is a need. We're going to fund that through this program. And we'll start to see that $6 million, slowly, but start to whittle down as we address these. Rather than trying to piecemeal it into individual projects, you have a whole comprehensive ADA project that you'll see dwindle down.
I'd like to say something. I saw this about a year ago or 8 months ago from when I went at a PWAB meeting. And what they said was that where they are right now, if they're going to, when that set of stairs gets to the point where it's too dangerous to use, they're either going to demolish it, replace it with nothing, or if they're going to maintain the access from the street down to that parking lot, they're going to have to build something which looks like that. And currently, I know Rob was really surprised that it made it as far as it had been, but he was given, I think, 5 minutes to prepare the plan, and then that's how it got developed.
So it was not part of the ADA study?
It might have been part of an ADA study saying they have to replace they need to start planning on replacement of the stairs. But right now, the way it was presented to me was that the stairs are either going to be demolished when they become too dangerous to use, or they will have to build something that looks with that many switchbacks in order to get it down from the street.
So on the worksheet here, the box is checked for land/right-of-way acquisition required. Do you know the particulars of that? The city has to acquire land to build this ramp? I-22?
If I remember what he said, they may need a little bit of space, which is beyond the end of the current street, in order to fit in the ramps, which would be required to replace the ADA.
I believe that's correct. It's a small sliver.
Okay. I'd like to make a few comments on this. You know, I've used those stairs from time to time. And the reason I use them is because they're a shortcut from the end of Surf down to the Embarcadero. But I will tell you that this ramp would not be any kind of a shortcut. For me, if I were to be faced with walking down this ramp or just going down beach, I would go down beach. So it seems to me that the benefit of the shortcut is completely done away with by construction of this ramp.
John, the other thing which came up there, they'd actually probably have little stairs between one end of the ramp to the next one, as so there would be a shortcut for people who could handle it, but it's just because everything is going to be very close to it together when they do it. This was drawn with a mouse, so this was as accurate as they could do it at the time that they started it. But yes, that is very likely. They will probably have little connections between the various ramp levels.
Okay, and then the other thing is the utility of it. How much is it used? I mean, it seems to me the city, if you're going to embark on spending this kind of money on something, you would at least do the research to find out how many people are using the stairs.
That came up at council last night, and so I think that's part of the...
Yeah. There's no way to easily determine that. There's no way to cheaply put up a camera or something or somehow talk to the neighbors. I don't know how you would do that, but maybe even get to the point where you go get a chain link rental company and close off both ends of the stairs and see how many complaints you get. Something that will tell you how necessary these stairs are, that you would spend $300,000 plus on a project.
I think there's only like 3 or 4 days a year where the parking on Surf gets important enough for people to use this shortcut in order to get to see the fireworks or the boat parade, or there may be a few other things or anything like that. So it's not it's probably 200 to 500 people.
So, I mean, thinking that, and not really knowing the particulars, but getting that input from you, John, I as a member of this committee, would recommend against this project.
Well, I just have a question before we start making recommendations, and it's more of a general one around ADA compliance and the transition plan. I would think a city is required to be ADA compliant, and if you don't have the funds to do it, that there would be some kind of requirement about having a plan to get ADA compliant, separate from these stairs. Just as a baseline question, because I've heard talk of, like, why would we have projects in here if we don't have funding for them? But isn't the city required to be ADA compliant at some point?
We do have to meet ADA requirements, especially for new projects going forward. So if this project were to, be approved in the budget, it has to be ADA compliant. We can't build a new stair.
But I mean for retro, for other things, like the aside from these stairs, like for the streets, for the other pieces, is the city not required to have some kind of plan in place to make sure that, in general, the city has ADA-compliant streets and roadways and sidewalks? And
so that was part of doing the ADA study, to identify where those deficiencies exist. And the plan is really we're funding little pieces of it as we go along. So there was some restroom handrails installed this year. We're going to do sidewalk work next year. We're trying to hit off. You can't do everything at once. Even if we had the funding, we wouldn't be able to. So the study helped us identify where we need to move forward with that.
Are there timelines?
I don't believe.
For a city to become ADA compliant, for instance, just as an example, once you've recognized that all your bathrooms aren't ADA compliant, is there a timeline with when which you need to become compliant, or it's just as money allows?
I don't have the answer for you for that. I'll have to get back to you on that.
I'd like to throw one other grenade in. Very likely beach does not meet ADA requirements either. I mean, the sidewalks for the street itself. So if we're going to do something about this area here, it's going to take more than what we would probably feel is reasonable to spend at this time.
Just in general, my mother is currently using a walker. There's no way we would ever go. I don't know how far that is. But if we're going to spend $300,000 on ADA issues, which I support, I don't have a problem. I don't think this is the way I would spend the money. And land acquisition being required, I don't see there's an estimate for buying that property. I just sat through a PWAP meeting, I guess, and somebody wants to put up $1 million home. So that's very, very valuable property. And I think there's other ways to deal with getting people from the top down below, whether it's shuttles or something else. Generally, I think someone would go drop someone off at the bottom and then come meet them. But this just seems like something that's put together in 5 minutes without much thought as far as who actually would use that, even being sympathetic to someone who's in a wheelchair or having a walker or having difficulty walking at all. So there probably is an issue getting back and forth, but I don't think this is not a very good use of $300,000. I agree with where John's going.
So I, to keep us focusing on track, none of us are ADA experts, and that's really outside the scope of this. Typically, that's when new projects are done, you have to make them. But there is money involved. But from what I thought I heard at council, maybe you can elaborate, this was not approved. They were just perhaps looking at it as a higher priority of something. And some of these very same comments came up in terms of evaluate the usage. Is it something you really want to do? So, Jennifer, where are they on approving this? Because I think our comments would be evaluate whether there's a need to do it, and that's what I heard last night the council was going to do anyways. Did I miss something there?
Well, no. I would just say evaluate the need for this, but I'd like as part this as a piece of understanding what the larger requirements are and the finances and timelines that would go along with larger requirements.
Well, just given the fact that the design is pretty rudimentary and the dollar value associated with this, it would be beyond the city manager's contract authority. So it would come back to council even if it was more refined at $308,000. You know, city manager can't execute a contract for that amount. So we did try to break up for the council projects that if they approve the budget, they wouldn't see come back to them because of the dollar limit, the dollar amount of them, projects that they would see because of the dollar amount, and then projects that they would see just because they're too conceptual at this point. I think that would this would fall into kind of both of those categories, too much money and too conceptual.
Okay, so it wasn't approved.
No, what I understand is that the worksheet here shows that the $41,000 for the engineering and such was going to fall in fiscal 18-19, but it did not get into the 18-19 budget. $41,000, right?
Right.
So in the original document, the $41,000 was in the 18-19 column.
Here.
Right. Staff didn't intend for it to be. We had intended to remove it. But then during council discussion, they actually put it back in
there. Right. So basically they're telling you it's okay to spend $41,000 next year to do the engineering and preliminary work for this project.
On the design of it.
And that's within the general city manager's discretion, purchasing capability, authorization.
You're right. And then the design would tell.
See, and I think for me, I mean, spending $41,000 on a project that I think
that may not go
has no merit. Is pretty wasteful.
So I think, I guess the feedback to provide to the council at the budget study session is that this particular capital project, the committee doesn't really see the cost benefit value without knowing utilization and other information about the stairs and maybe other needs that may trump this one is what I'm hearing.
And put in there land acquisition. They're saying you need to buy land. That box is checked. That could easily be $1 million+ to buy the property there. That is not cheap property. And that's not a minor mistake to leave out if that's the case. If you check the box that says you need to buy land, and it's that land is very expensive.
Bart?
We're not talking 300,000. We're talking.
It's not buildable land for any other purpose. It's about a 1.5-to-1 slope on there. So
people can be very, very creative.
Yes, they can be, but it would be very difficult for anyone to get the geological reports required in order to justify any sort of construction other than a ramp. And so the land itself, yeah, it's going to be expensive, but it's not going to be $1 million for a 20-foot strip of land.
But that wasn't approved, so we're only talking, let's stay focused on the 41,000 that we don't think is, the majority seems to believe is not appropriate expenditure until the entire project is evaluated.
I just want to add, though, that if someone comes along and sues the city for not being ADA compliant, like there needs to be some kind of movement on these types of public spaces. I'm not necessarily in favor of the 41,000 on the engineering for this ramp, but there needs to be some kind of movement. And so if that's the chain link fence or, you know, because that will come at a much greater cost.
I think the comment that the public works director has made is that we either need to fix them or probably take them down and just close them. So, I mean, those are kind of the options. They're not really in a condition that they can stay open at this point.
Okay.
Well, I would suggest that the council seriously consider just taking them down.
So I'm hearing that loud and clear, and that will be part of the the May 22nd kind of introductory piece of the budget study session prior to getting into PERS and the forecast.
Okay. So some of us may be there for that.
Welcome to attend. That would be great.
All right, moving on. Thank you.
Okay, so I-44, this is the water system maintenance projects that are being delayed because of One Water. Why would maintenance projects be delayed, especially considering that One Water is almost done? So we have to keep in mind that we were putting this document together in April. One Water is about done, and at least a component of that is going to PWAB tomorrow? Wednesday?
They say there's going to be a presentation on it, but there's no report available for staff.
I think, you know, the point being, when we were developing this, we did not have close to refined numbers or know what those were. And rather than keeping in there projects that were conceptual with a kind of estimated number, we thought it would be better to get the results from One Water, have some pretty clear direction on what those needs are and estimates for the cost of those needs, and come back with amendments that would capture all of those at once.
And that's understandable when you're talking about things like how big should a sewer pipe be, or you know, how big should a water tank be, or, you know, so when you're looking at siting a new water tank, it makes sense. But when you're talking about water tanks developing rust and not being painted because there's some kind of a plan that's being developed, those kind of things just don't make any sense. I mean, you've got normal ongoing maintenance items, even though there are high-dollar ones. You have to coat water tanks. You have to clean them periodically. You have to take care of the buildings. And
John?
All these things were in the budget last year.
That was discussed at the last PWAB meeting, too. And so right now, they know they have to replace the tanks. It's to the point there's a plant. One of these tanks, I think, is the Nutmeg plant tank, and they're in the process of going through the thing to do it. And what the One Water program did said, you may not want to have that same tank there. It may not be worth the maintenance. They're as soon as they get a size for the Nutmeg plant, they're going to tear it down and they're going to build the correct size plant. So this is very deep inside of what they try to do with the water department here. But they haven't had the money to do anything to the tank, and now they're almost ready to say what they should do there. But they knew, say, 10 years ago, the tank was past its usable service, and they've just been trying to figure out how to get
it. So the the advisory board that you're on, Public Works, they're looking at things like these other water tanks that show deterioration.
I get to comment on this again tomorrow.
Okay. Because there is money available.
Yes, but they're
Hopefully that's not the holdup here. That's not the hurdle. That
there's the biggest hurdle will be the permitting, getting the appropriate permits for building the tank. But it's also going to be, yeah. They almost started doing it until they realized it was the wrong size for what they needed. And so that's what this one water is doing is it's looking at all the water requirements for the city and saying, okay, what's the appropriate infrastructure for our requirements? And they're about ready to start telling us. So no, it's not being delayed, but it's been a big issue for many years.
Well, as you know, rust doesn't sleep.
I know.
Yeah.
Have you read that book, Rust?
Okay, thank you. Is that question 13?
I think we're on question 12 now.
Okay.
That's
connection. Okay.
A little bit connected with one water and what it has to do with fixing leaks in the sewer collection system. So one water is an analysis of water distribution, sewer collection, and the stormwater transmit. And so they're putting that all into one comprehensive document. So.
And my concern here was just the way this project is written up, you know, it makes the statement that the resulting high salt concentrations from seawater intrusion into the sewer line contribute significantly to wastewater treatment plant upsets. So, I mean, I don't know what these guys are dealing with down there, but, I mean, it seems like a project that is going to have to be addressed regardless of what the One Water Plan says, wouldn't you think?
Part of the One Water Plans is to do the cost-benefit analysis, and there's actually a tie between the One Water Plan and the WRF. So, what I'm interested to see is the cost-benefit analysis for water system, sewer collection.
But is there anything in the One Water Plan that will shine any light on rehabilitating or repairing this sewer line?
It's specifically included in the One Water Plan.
The Embarcadero sewer line?
I'm pretty sure that's included. It's supposed to be in the One Water Plan too. So basically if it says water or sewer, it's supposed to be in the plan. It's a comprehensive plan for the whole city.
Maybe I'll feel more enlightened in a day or two when the QAB tomorrow evening. And then Councilmember Beckman, you asked a related question that's not on the list that was sent out regarding the Nutmeg water tank property. The question being the future capital project. Project shows a purchase price of $75,000. It's my understanding that we are paying $20,000 to $25,000 per month. If for rental, if these values are close to accurate, why don't we purchase the property now and stop paying the annual lease payments? So the rent that we pay is about $22,000 per year instead of per month.
Right, I realize it was per year.
Yeah, per year. And then the $75,000, there hasn't been, the property was appraised for the entire property. We haven't gotten an appraisal for the 1 acre part that we lease, so we don't know what the purchase price would be if that's $75,000 or something else at this point. I'm not sure, I don't know where the $75,000 came from, but just to clarify that.
I clarified my comments by saying if these numbers are accurate,
right.
$20,000 to $25,000 per year rent and the $75,000, basically we would have paid that off in 2 or 3 years. So if the plan is to do that, because I don't know what other options are, but if the plan is that we're going to do that down the road, to me it would make sense to go ahead and buy the property now.
Well, your question said $20,000 to $25,000 per month.
I corrected it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I had a follow-up. You had another email that says it's per year.
Okay.
But so regardless. Three time, you know, so you get So even if it's, quite frankly, 100,000, I don't want to throw numbers out for spaghetti people to start negotiating, but it seems like it would be worth our while to move sooner than later if that's where we're going. I had not known that that's, because I thought maybe there were alternatives for the water tank, but if it's, if we're planning on doing that, it certainly, to me, makes sense to go ahead and get the property now, even if it sits there for 5 years, because it can stop the rent payments.
Okay.
The other capital project, because your next comment, I think, goes on to something else, has to do with 41. I don't know what the value is, or is that down the road on 41? We're not spending money this year.
Right now, the 41 interchange project is being funded by CMAQ grant funds, which are federally administered grants through SLOCOG. And there's a local portion, a local share portion, but those are, we're using our intersection impact fees that can only be used for that. It's not something that we could use for other, the significant cost of the project would be down the road if we were able to go forward and do something with it. And
okay, as long as we're not spending money now, that we don't need to take any more time up
right
to discuss this.
Right.
I think.
Okay, thanks.
I think we're on question 13.
Yes.
And that had to do with the budget study session, slide 3, where it listed goals, and it, two of the goals said be mindful. Those are city manager-directed goals that were provided to staff as they were proposing their budgets. And that was putting everything in the context of, you know, the Morro Bay received a little bit of a reprieve, if you will, from PERS, and that we had already scheduled to pay off one of our side funds. So while a lot of other agencies were experiencing some of the real significant increases in 18-19, and that's what you read about with SLO in the paper, and they're having that, got a little bit of a reprieve with that. The city manager was very cautious in reminding departments that that doesn't mean we're adding positions that are going to add this ongoing cost to the general fund. We need to be mindful of the fact that 1920 will be a $300,000 increase just in PERS. So to kind of give context to everybody.
I would just suggest that being mindful isn't a goal. The goal would be to address, to come up with a plan, to strategize, to do something, and being mindful maybe is a strategy to get to what the overall goal would be. But I don't think as a citizen of Morro Bay we want a goal of being mindful. I think we want our city council to do something and take action steps. And so I would suggest, if there's possibility of rephrasing that, to figure out some kind of action-oriented goal other than just thinking about it. And I get, and I totally understand the need to be mindful, and I appreciate the sentiment and the intention behind that.
Okay. Page 13 of the packet mentions that one of the city clerk's duties is to coordinate the advisory board, and the comment was, how do we help to ensure that the boards are reflective of the community? You know, this is a challenging one. We notice vacancies, solicit applications, but you can't force people to apply, and generally when they do apply, we're usually happy to get applicants. So we're open to any other ideas in terms of advertising for those, you know, vacancies or soliciting participation in those, if the committee or if you have any specific ideas, you're welcome to share those with us to try to be more representative.
Yeah, I was just wondering what kind of outreach is done besides posting notices. And
so the, you know, the
obviously
website,
we got the notice and said, please share with your friends. I was just wondering if it's, if the city is thinking about diversity when it's thinking about the boards. I understand, and I see, like, looking for somebody who has a hotel with less than this number of rooms and more than that number of rooms. But when I think about our diverse Morro Bay population, if that's even on the city's radar in terms of thinking about the kinds of people that they'd like to fill these positions.
So that is one of the council goals that came out of the study session in January was communication and outreach, and that being kind of multimodal, and recognizing that maybe our demographics, you know, Facebook might not be the best place, or at least not, you know, shouldn't be the only one. And the council directed the city manager to kind of not only increase communication, but do that in multiple different mechanisms. So, you know, we're kind of tossing out some ideas of doing more inserts in the utility bills, because that would reach a large component of our population, and perhaps it would be the most utilized form, and, you know, based on maybe our demographics, people would read that more closely. So we're trying to come up with some different methods besides the city manager's biweekly update, besides Facebook, besides the newspapers, you know, however we can reach people.
Is there a lens, though, of thinking about the demographics of Morro Bay and the representation on these advisory boards? Or, I mean, I understand the need for increased communication. Is there that kind of a lens on this thinking at all, or not so much?
In terms of targeting a specific group, I think we're trying to get the message out to everybody, and hopefully that will generate a representative response. I would be careful about, we wouldn't advertise just to a specific group in hopes of getting them on there, right? It's open to everybody, and hopefully by spreading across the communication across many different modes of communication, we would get a more representative response back, I think is the goal.
I don't think that usually works out. If we look across our general government representation, I don't think it usually works out just to spread the information and then hope you get a representative demographic on your boards. That doesn't mean only sending invitations to certain populations, but it is something I think will affect us fiscally, is having different minds from that are representative of the Morro Bay demographics, whether it's the CFAC or whatever other advisory boards. I just would urge the council or whoever's doing the recruiting to not put it in black and white terms of either we're going to reach out to everybody or we're only going to reach out to certain populations, but to be thinking creatively about how do we recruit so that we have representation from our entire community.
I can pass that along, and if you have any specific thoughts, please share those.
Okay.
I'm curious, how were you recruited for this? Did you just read something and put your name in?
I was recruited through person-to-person contact.
I was recruited by person-to-person contact, and yeah. I told them I could either do PWAB or I could do CFAC, and I ended up on both.
Yeah.
Good points, Dawn. I can say in general, and I think the 8 years I've looked at, served, or actually been attending some of the interviews for the other committees, et cetera, that in general, I don't know if I'd say specifically there's a lens on the diversity or representing Morro Bay, because personally, I don't think the Morro Bay demographic matches, you know, the U.S. population in general. But I do know that we're certainly open to all the interviews and recruitments I've seen have been looking for the most qualified candidates and how they would fit in with the board or their experience maps what needs to be done. And I've sent my comments on to all the council members about selection and that. And sometimes, you know, you might want to come and speak at the interview and public comment if you know a particular candidate that is qualified. Or if you don't know them, I've not spoken in most cases and told the candidates that I can't, you know, if I don't know your background or that. So I think they're open to these suggestions. And if you think of anything, you know, feel free to send the comments on. What I've experienced mostly in watching this is that there's only a couple of boards that, like recreation comes to mind, where there's an overabundance of people that want to do it, and versus other boards which involves a lot of detailed finance or work or engineering or whatever, where we have a shortage of candidates, you know, typically. So But yeah, I think all the council members, previous and past, have been open to, you know, trying to evaluate candidates. And many of us just go out and reach out to people we know that we think might be a good candidate, so to you know, increase the pool of applicants to choose from. So. And the last page, maybe, of the questions, or...
So I think those are all the questions that came in that we distributed out, and then a few left from Council Committee Member Beckman, I think, that I didn't address. The first one about the transfers in for the general fund revenues. It's in the financial summary section, and it, you know, this has come up. It goes back to that double counting. I think we made better strides on the expenditure side at trying to pull out those transfers, at least into one bottom line item. Recognize that, you know, kind of missed it for the revenues, and quite frankly ran out of weekends and hours in the day to do that. I think it's something, I understand the concern. I think it's a valid point. It's been brought up by a few other people as well. And all I can say is we can try to do better going forward with that.
No, I understand that you're basically, you've been here, what, 5 months, 6 months, whatever it is, and you've accomplished a lot. But just to make sure it's very clear to the council and others that if you add up all the numbers, you're overstating our revenue, because there are things that are double counted in there. For example, the $14 million general fund includes $1.5 million of double counting. So as long as that's understood, that we're overstating the revenue that we have to work with, and then you're hoping down the road, next year or sometime, that you can basically find a way to present this such that we're not adding two numbers up to the same one twice.
So if we look at page B8 and B9 in the financial summaries, that's where, unless you want advise differently, I think we did a better job of trying to pull those out in recognizing $12.7 million is actual revenue coming into the general fund. $1.6 million of that is transfers, and that totals up to the $14.3 million. And then on B9 next to it is expenditures, and we have that same kind of chart.
No, I understand that you can kind of go find the information.
Yeah.
And you can see that the 14 is made up of some transfers in, but then on the summary, when you add up to 55 million, then it's not 55 million, it's something less than that.
Right, and so I think, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
well,
you.
Well, no, that's fine. So it's, you know, as long as everybody understands, we do not have $55 million worth of revenue to deal with. We have something less than that as far as the total amount of money.
So I'm thinking, in my mind, it's the charts on B4 and B6 that we can improve on in delineating that. We did try to make sure that the capital projects weren't included in the enterprise funds, for example. So the wharf amount of 9.3 plus the 200,000 and other capital is not showing up in the accumulation fund. You know, we did try to do it to some extent.
Okay.
But you're right, there is double counting in there, and I think that these are the two charts I think we could be clearer on.
Okay.
For the
I understand that you're continuing what has been done.
Yeah.
And you can't change it all. You've changed a lot, which is to be complimented.
Can I make a comment on transfers? Jennifer, you might take a look at page C44, just to double check the total on that. Yeah, C44. Yeah, it's not the same total as what's in the other schedules. There's probably something.
Okay, maybe my numbers are the same, so maybe we can chat. Maybe you have an older version?
Maybe. Mine says 1552, 859.
And what does your number say on B6?
So the transfers in are $15,75,795. Maybe I have a really old version.
I think the $15,575 is the more recent iteration. The $15,552 is the
original.
Is the original
yeah.
one.
Okay. Jennifer, we had the same issue about a year ago when we were trying to do the pie charts for the citizen budget-friendly documents and the transfers. It was very confusing what to include and what not to include. And we didn't want staff to have to manually do all this stuff or put a pie chart out there that someone would say, well, where'd that number come from? So I understand it's an iterative process, and we'll get there. But thanks for your comment, Bart.
Okay, and then I think we talked about the legal fees for the wharf, so that will be added. Okay, so number five, I wasn't sure I completely understood the question. Are you asking?
I look at the revenue on water and sewer, and there's malware collecting, but I believe that there is, of the bill that we pay, that there is a certain amount for the 218 vote, if you will, that's set aside to fund future capital project. And then there's a part we're paying for what we're using today. The facilities are in place. And there's a lot of questions on how much money we put in, where is it, what's happening to it. And I would have thought we would have seen basically how much is basically an accumulation. And it's possible that the accumulation part is in the number that says accumulation. But I would have thought in the revenue, we would have known of the bills being paid, how much of it is going to an accumulation and how for the new project for both water and sewer. And does that make sense?
I think so.
We pay a bill that right. I believe part of it is paying for the future capital project. You know, so we're not waiting till we get there to build it to start collecting revenue. We've started already a year or 2 years ago after the 218 passed to start to collect funds. So it's a matter of where's that line that says this is what we've collected so far.
It sounds like maybe even that pie chart that was done about a year ago that showed, and I don't know the numbers, but, you know, X amount was for current operations, X amount for existing infrastructure, and then the remainder was meant for the wharf project?
That's right, Jennifer. I believe Bart's question is a variation of, we hear this quite frequently on the wharf CAC, how much of the 215 sewer portion really is where it's focused? And on one of your pie charts that you presented at council, this may have been before your stay here, there, I believe the figure was $18 and some change was for capital, sewer capital improvement, because what's confusing for a lot of citizens is there's the basic sewer rate, and then in 2015 it went up $7 or $8, and the next year another, and people are looking at just that increase thinking maybe correctly, but I don't think so, that all of that raise was going to the capital fund for the new sewer plant, when reality part of that raise was inflationary, part of it was for increased maintenance of the current, and that's what I think citizens are trying to get a handle on. We raised sewer rate. We also raised water rates, but I don't hear that so much in the question because they haven't been raised for 20 years. But we did raise sewer rates in 2015. How much of that incremental raise was going to the, Bart identified correctly, I believe, the accumulation fund? That's what people want to know, and I think it's buried in a couple of these line items. Somehow, at some point, we've got to get that info out there.
So I think we had some kind of general conversation about that at the Blue Ribbon, initial Blue Ribbon.
And we're going to be looking at
meeting,
that.
And the task force that the city manager set up has asked for specific information about that, too. So I think our task is to get some feedback from the committee and comfort level with them on what those numbers are and put together a chart or something to get that out to you so you can see that.
I would agree. The Blue Ribbon Committee would have to know that, mm-hmm. or would certainly want to know that to make their analysis of where do we already have money versus where do we need some future funding.
Right. Yeah. So it will be looked at very carefully. So, but thanks. Good point. And then I think there's only one question left. That was the emergency funds for the Cerrito Peak, number six.
Mm-hmm. So the Cerrito Peak was purchased for $385. I brought it with me. And there was a credit back of $85. So $350, there was a credit back of $85,000. So our total purchase price was $267, $265. That did come from emergency reserves. The discussion that occurred at council, there was a question that was asked if we could use park in lieu fees to dedicate that land as open space and essentially reimburse the general fund for the purchase. The city attorney believes that we can do that if it comes with some kind of dedication of the property. There wasn't any discussion beyond that, so there was no council direction provided to do anything with that. It was a question that came up, and we haven't changed the budget to make any reflection of doing that.
Okay, so if nothing's been done, I guess I'll reserve my comments. But again, I was one of those who was persuaded to support this because it would basically be taken off the market. It'll be purchased by Mimbosa or someone privately. There'll be a net no cost, including interest, to the city. That's the way it was presented, which I supported. So as long as we're continuing down that path, and they also committed to making periodic go back and look and see how is it going, whether that's Mimbosa or other people, who to see if they're moving toward that goal, because that was a pretty dramatic stand to take emergency funds to set aside an area for a group of people who live around there, and there's other uses for that money, like emergencies.
Right.
So as long as nothing has happened, then I guess I can't comment, other than I would like to see a sort of a status report of where are we on moving towards this. I don't know that it was written in the motion that was made, but there was discussion about if they can't make this happen in 3 years, we'd put it back on the market and basically get those funds back to offset the emergency funds.
So the portion about 3 years, that is in the contract. I'm not sure. I don't recall if they're seeing updates, but I can go back and check.
I don't know that the motion captured the discussion exactly.
Okay.
It was the motion ended up being pretty loose, okay, as I recall. But certainly the intent of those discussing it, including those who encouraged us to support it, said that if we can make this happen, then we'll return the money. We'll go out and try and see if we can sell it. And I would presume that would be a reasonable cost. Maybe not the slope that we're talking about earlier. Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes our questions and everything, I think, on the budget. So, Jennifer, you got, I think our main comment was the $41,000 on the design for the stairway.
May I ask you a couple
yeah,
very
sure,
brief follow-up,
yeah,
questions? Mm-hmm. On page D10, there's a note in bold print on that page. I'm not really understanding it. Can you explain that note to the committee? Especially the part where it says that in 2020, the balances of both loans are due in full, and at that time, $500,000 must be paid to the parking in lieu fund.
Yes, the Destacios.
Yeah. So the our facility maintenance program has been funded with the rent from the Destacios building, or what is called the Destacios building. When that was purchased, I guess there was a loan from the parking in lieu fund. I was told that that's been reconciled, but I don't know that for a fact, and I didn't have a chance to look into it. This was a note from a prior budget document. I think I bolded it to look into that $500,000. It was kind of a meant to remind
me. Can you
me.
Just get back to us mm-hmm. on that then? Okay.
Sure.
Great. Thank you. And then on page I-17 and 18, in capital projects. And this is one that was in last year's budget, or the current year's budget, I guess. It's for playground equipment. And under funding sources, it says Measure Q general fund to be determined, $75,000 in future years. Do you envision bringing a request to the committee to spend Measure Q on playground equipment?
No. This is one of the capital projects that the council added to the 18-19 budget. The funding source is going to be park in lieu fees.
Okay, so this is going to be changed.
This will have a different iteration.
It is now. Okay.
Yep.
I don't have the. Okay. Maybe I can come in. And
No, I remember that discussion. That's what why I was confused about the park in lieu fees. How are they used for play? You know, that's
parking and park in lieu and parking and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't see the connection, but okay, thanks.
And then just the last thing, Jennifer, on page H3, I think this must just be a fast finger type thing, but in the 2017-18 estimated, you've got a general fund transfer out to the general fund for the cap. $1,262,000. Has that already been changed?
It should be $262,000.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, good catch.
I have just a quick thing on this transmittal. It's dated 2016. I think it's just a typo at the very A1.
I lost a couple of years.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I had one other request too. What would it take to do a report of active contracts for the city? Is there a way you can push a button and get a list of them out?
There's not, because without the purchasing system being implemented. Otherwise, I would print maybe an encumbered list for you and be able to go down and identify what, you know, the contracts. But without that, I will check with the clerk's office and see if they have a list.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I'm thinking that how's the purchasing system implementation coming?
So we just spoke with, we just finished audit, and we just had our entrance with 17-18 audit. So the auditors were on site the week we were producing this, actually, the end of April, to do their interim, and then we had an exit conference from that. And in that exit conference, we went through those outstanding findings. The staff are working on putting together kind of desk manuals or procedures that we can start building off of, and that was one of their findings. I think I advised the council and perhaps even to the committee that my goal was to get the procedures done for 17-18. Expect to see the purchasing findings still open, but we would have it done by, you know, December of 18. It just wouldn't be completed for the audit. When I shared that with the auditors, they expressed that they would rather see the purchasing module implemented and the finding for the procedures will still be there, but it's not as significant for them, which I agree with, it's not. So I might flip those around. I still don't think that, you know, May 15th we're going to be able to get it implemented by year end, but I did tell them that we would try to get it implemented by the time they did their interim audit, which is October.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. So I think that concludes our discussion of agenda item B1. And if anybody has anything else, you know, certainly you can send the comments to Jennifer or myself, but I think that's a good discussion.
I'd like to repeat what we said last month, and I think it's just an absolutely fabulous job by your group. You taskmaster. They're smiling.
Are they?
I'll second that.
Thanks for smiling.
All 30.
Absolutely unanimous.
And that budget study session on the 22nd is open to the public?
It is. And I believe it starts at 4.
4 o'clock.
Will there be updated sheets for our books before that meeting?
We didn't intend on... kind of my intent is to get... And I'll share this with the committee, too. We shared with the council, if you have typos or editorial things of that nature, you're welcome to submit them to us to kind of incorporate into the final budget document in the interest of, you know, paper conservation as well as just time. We were planning on putting out another kind of proposed that wouldn't say draft on it. It would say proposed for the 12th meeting, but I think we could get that out at least electronically to the council and the committee to look at in advance if that's helpful. The printing process can be really time-consuming and just generating.
I think whatever your schedule is fine with me. I just want to make sure that everybody has the same resources to look at. Yeah, the same version,
right.
So we're not working off different pages.
Yeah, we'll put together an electronic version and send that out probably first part of June. Early part of June to give you a couple weeks to get through it.
Fair enough. Thank you. All right. Item B2, any subcommittee reports? Not on CAFR, not. Okay. And that brings us to future agenda items, B3. Jennifer, do you have any requirements that have to be met for our June meeting that...
Looking for my list. So for the 19th, we'll have the third quarter investment report, the third quarter budget update, which will include the third quarter Measure Q update, possibly the single source or the sole source for the fire engine.
Okay.
And then I think we'll try to have the result of the fee study RFP for the committee to kind of review and weigh in on, because we're targeting to take that to council on the 26th, that final meeting in June. Ideally, we'll be in contract with them starting in the fiscal year, so we can have about 6 months to get through that process and have it in time for the fee update in February of 19. So probably those three items will take up the entire meeting, I would presume. And again, if there's anybody interested in sitting on the evaluation committee for the proposals, please just let me know. It'll be probably a weekend effort on your part and a couple hours on Wednesday and a few hours for interviews the first week in June.
Okay. So as Jennifer asked us at the beginning of the meeting, any of you, if you think of it now before we leave, please get with her, because this is kind of a short turnaround. So appreciate that.
Do you know what time on Wednesday? Did you say that?
We don't have a time. I think we can be, we'll try to accommodate, you know, everybody. We're each director, if you will, that has a subcommittee that's impacted, we're putting an offer out there for any member of those committees if they want to send a representative to sit on the evaluation panel and help select the consultant. So we'll try to coordinate everybody's schedule once we have a list of all the participants.
Okay. Encourage everybody to consider. Thank you. That sounds like a full agenda for next time, so perfect. Our next meeting is June 19th, third Tuesday of June, same time and location, 3:30 here. So I'll adjourn the meeting at 5:15. Thank you all.